In this episode, we are discussing, do you know how to learn a song by ear? And of course, we got a few tips for you and also from the other community members. Here we go.
Hey there, music maker. I'm Hayes Griffin.
I'm Magnus Sedelund.
And welcome to the Mandolin Secrets Podcast, a show where we take a deeper look at what's happening in the world of mandolin secrets. Each episode, we'll tackle our question of the week, unpack the latest mandolin secrets lessons, and answer your questions about mandolin, guitar, and all things music. In this month's episode, we'll be discussing, do you use a tone guard for your mandolin? Why or why not? And do you know how to learn songs by ear? If so, how did you acquire that skill? We've also got some new content releases from Magnus in Mandolin Secrets and one from me in Guitar Club.
Yeah.
But before we dive into this week's discussion, be sure to head to mandolinsecrets.com/podcast to sign up for reminders about upcoming episodes. And just search Mandolin Secrets Podcast on your favorite podcast platform and subscribe to get updates when we release a new episode.
Yeah, and I think this tone guard question, it's actually something we talked about before, but I think it's always an like up-to-date, present question for mandolin players. And I do even know that you have a slightly different approach to this nowadays, Hayes.
Yes.
So what have happened in your tone guard story for the last year?
So when you and I first started kind of hanging out with one another online, yeah, you know, during the pandemic, I was 100% all about the tone guard. You know, mm-hmm, the tone guard was like essential. You know, I would have a pick and my tone guard. Those were the only two accessories I needed for my mandolin, right?
Yeah. And by the way, if someone of our listeners, watchers, doesn't know what a tone guard is, I'm going to show it here for the video viewers, and you can maybe describe it in words, what it's like.
Yeah. So the tone guard is kind of this device that you can attach to the back of your mandolin that keeps the mandolin off of your body and allows the instrument to resonate without kind of being dampened by your stomach or wherever the mandolin makes contact with your body. You can kind of see that. I mean, what would you say, Magnus? Is it like a 2 centimeters or something like that off of the back of the mandolin at the highest point or something, you know?
Yeah, I think 2 centimeters is 2.5 maybe.
Yeah, something like that. But there are some advantages to this device, right? Like one, it keeps the mandolin off of your body. And I do notice a tonal difference when I play with my tone guard. It is a little louder. It projects more. I've got more bass response. And another thing I like about the tone guard is that it adds weight to the back of the mandolin. Because you know this, Magnus, on F-style mandolins, the headstock will dive if you take your arm off of it, right? So this kind of helps with that. But over the last year, I have kind of changed my view on the tone guard. It's not that I dislike the tone guard and don't want to use it, but I had my shiny, brand new Red Diamond F-style mandolin and put my tone guard on it for about a month. And then I just took it off to kind of like clean the mandolin up and noticed that it had left these weird impressions in the finish because my mandolin was pretty new. So I was like, man, I don't want to like ruin the finish on my mandolin less than a year after getting it, right? So I removed the tone guard and started playing without it for maybe a couple months with the hopes that the finish would cure in a few months and then I would just put the tone guard back on and everything would be fine.
Yeah.
But as I started to play the mandolin without the tone guard, I actually modified the way that I held the mandolin. And I think the way that I have to hold the mandolin to get good tone without the tone guard, you know, off of my body, is actually the way that I should have been holding it all along. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like I kind of, instead of keeping the mandolin flat to my body, I was forced to kind of push the headstock forward with my left arm a little bit and keep it at like more of an angle.
Does that happen also when you're standing up playing?
Yes. I still do that. And for me, I think that was the technique all along. You know, I think now that I've been playing with it, I've noticed less tension in my like left hand and things like that when I'm playing the mandolin. Cool. I used to like grip it really tightly, and I don't know if that was just because of the bad angle that I had.
Yeah.
But taking the tone guard off just forced me to reckon with, I think, a bad part of my technique that I hadn't touched before.
Yeah.
So for now, I'm going without the tone guard. I think it's a good exercise for me, you know, to kind of...
I really like it. I mean, also, to me, actually, I don't like the weight that it adds to the instrument. Yeah. I like this, the pure... It's like kind of playing a naked... without it. So it's more sexy without the tone guard, sort of. The feel of it. And I also played it like that for an entire year, since my mandolin also was new, with a new finish and all that. So I got a new Red Diamond mandolin in February 2023. So for an entire year, I played it without it. And I really fond of it. And it's never a problem when I'm sitting down playing, because like you're saying there, then I can easily... like keep the back of the mandolin from my stomach.
Yes.
But then I put it on now here in late February or March or anything. And there's something with a tone that I do like. So now the tone guard is there. And I'm not sure if I mean, it's sort of like there's an... how to put words to it, but the way that it affects the tone, I wouldn't, of course, probably a bit louder, but there's some like 3D stereo vibe tone to it that I'm losing when I don't use it.
I know exactly what you're talking about. It's hard to put to words exactly what the tone guard does for your mandolin that way, but it is... to me, it's almost like a more pure like resonance to the instrument. You know, there's like some kind of like unadulterated, you know, explosive sound that comes off of the instrument when you have the tone guard.
There is, and but it's interesting hearing you talk about you change your technique, because I'm not smart enough to actually have done that. So I just kept playing it in the same way. Maybe what if I try that, maybe it's... So probably for the coming weekend, I will take my tone guard off and experiment with this to see if it's make any sense. And I tell you what, it's not the first time I'm hearing about it, because I remember Petri Hakala, my mandolin mentor, if you put it that way, he using this one shoulder strap for his mandolin, because that also forces him to play like you were saying, and he don't like using tone guard at all. So he's a purist. So this one shoulder strap is... well, fixing the problem for him.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. I always find myself putting my shoulder up into my ear like this whenever I have a one shoulder strap, you know, like I...
Yeah, I think I haven't used it enough, but I'm like you, it's not comfortable. But
it feels like it's going to slide off, you know, or something like that.
But again, probably if you were committed to try it for the coming 3 months, probably you would adjust your posture and technique for it then.
Yeah.
But...
Interesting stuff.
Still, I mean, a lot of my heroes, I see Jacob Jolliffe, Chris Thiele, Grisman, Mike Marshall, I see them use tone guards.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like... I think I am affected by that even.
Yeah. I mean, and I don't think that's a bad thing to be affected by, you know, if masters of the craft are using something. I remember when Chris Thiele started using Wagon picks, everyone was like, what are those funny little picks with the holes in them? I got to get one of those. Maybe I'll sound like Chris Thiele, you know?
Yeah. But to be honest, my opinion, like returning to the tone guard, I'm impressed in the way it affects my sound.
Yeah. I can understand why, because I think I'm still in that camp with you. Mm. You know, it's almost like I gave up the tone guard for different reasons than the sound, you know?
Mm. Yeah. I really like it because, well, as I said, the coming weekend, I'm definitely taking the tone guard off just to play around with this again.
Yeah, fun. Well, let me know how it goes.
Yes.
I'll have to do an update episode.
Absolutely. I keep you updated. Should we go, let's look at some content?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm in a jazzy mood. Maybe I can play back my one of the latest releases I published into the Academy. I would say a very easy, but like stylistic jazz lick.
Yeah.
So it's really one way to outline some chord changes using like the, well, but using chord notes and arpeggios, but not in a flashy, fancy way, very pure and clean. So I call it like the Martin Taylor lick because I learned it from this Scottish guitarist, one of his educational material actually that I was studying, and I picked it up there like maybe 10 years ago or something like that. But it's sort of like a go-to kind of lick for some jazz changes. So I think I'm going to just play back here a minute of me using this lick, jamming a little bit, and then we can maybe see if we have something more to share about it. But here it is, the Martin Taylor jazz lick. Here we go with the backing track. One, two, three, four. Short and sweet like that, but
that lick's gonna be stuck in my head the rest of the day now.
it's very
it's
melodic. And it's the way that I also teaching it. So if anyone interested to learn it, I'm playing it first in first position, using some open strings even. Then I'm the same lick also suits really good, like one octave up for closed position. So, we're playing it in the key of F. But again, I do recommend people to like put it around, transpose it, and use it in different keys. Really good way to learn the fretboard
do that. No, I love it, man. It reminds me of some of the. I had a great jazz instructor when I was an undergrad named Pete Mills. He's a colleague now. It's weird to teach with the people that you went, you know, that taught you. Anyways, he recommended some of these books that teach this method of, have you heard of like digital patterns that jazz players use? It's almost like this one could be a digital pattern. You know, you're just essentially assigning scale degrees, right, to each of the notes in the pattern. Mm. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so if you view it from like the one chord, I think this one would start on then like the four, right? Because you start on a B flat. Is that correct?
Let me see. Okay. I know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So like that's how you would do the pattern, right? Mm. It would be like 4-6-1, you know what I mean? That kind of thing.
Actually, I would the way that I see it, the note would be B flat,
yeah.
But I see the chord as a G minor 7.
I guess this is a good discussion though, because this is always hard when talking about digital patterns, because the pattern moves over three different chords, right? It goes over a 2, a 5, and then a 1.
Yeah.
So the relationship of the numbers to the chord changes as the chord changes. So some people, it's like, do you view it as being part of the two chord, the chord that you begin with, or the, yeah. the one chord, the chord that you end
yes.
with.
Yes, yes.
You know, so that's, I guess, where I was
exactly.
sorry for not explaining
do,
that.
Da, de, yeah, it's really like a four
You're starting
triad.
On the third of the two chord, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you want to see it that way, but yeah.
Yes, and it's actually, yeah, it's actually making up a perfect four chord, because it's B flat, D, F, D. Do,
yeah.
Da, de, do. Yeah. yeah. Mm, that is, so we're being a bit theoretical here, but you know, people that are following us probably know that me and Hayes, we are sort of, in a way, analytic musicians, educated, yeah. trained, and we kind of, and we are very much also, well, I, let me speak for myself, but I'm a very, I'm an, how to say, an advocate for music theory and all that stuff.
Yes. Mm. I think, no, that's, you can speak for me on that one too. We've known each other long enough and had too many yeah. conversations like this. right?
Yeah.
I think a little bit of music theory goes a long way, because then it gives you that linguistic framework to talk yeah. about this
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah. Absolutely. You
know. But I love that, man. That's a really sweet lick.
Yeah, it's very like accessible for everyone in our community. I think it's not a
yeah.
it's easy to play sort of.
Yeah, it's not like a Charlie Parker bebop lick or something like that, right? Like
no, exactly. I'm right now playing some Charlie Christian vocabulary that I'm trying to include, but that is interesting stuff for me.
I give you a little secret here, man. You start to play that Charlie Christian vocabulary on the mandolin, you're going to start to sound an awful lot like Mr. Tiny Moore.
I even have a few questions related to this, like that I want to ask you, how would Tiny play this thing? Because but that's, I think it's something we're keeping off the podcast, but I'm very curious actually to see your get your input on it.
For sure. Excited.
It's about some fingerings ideas, because I have the melodies down, but how would you finger this? Would you do a position shift, or would you stay in one position? And you mentioned how, well, I do know how strong your pink is, and you told me it is from playing a lot of Tiny Moore stuff. So that gives me a clue that probably we're staying in this position. But yeah, sorry.
No, that's good. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, because if you watch videos of Tiny, that guy, his pinky is used, you know, he had huge hands. He was a big guy, like, you know, 6'4" or above, something like that. But yeah, so there's options, but check out that pinky, right?
yeah, happy to get your input. And while we're like talking jazz licks, how about your chromatic connecting lines?
Yeah,
can you give
man.
Us a short intro to what it's all about?
I'm actually going to grab the guitar, because I think I can demo this pretty quick. I had the opportunity a couple weeks ago to sit down with a really great, he's like us, Magnus. He's like a music theory nerd and advocate for theoretical frameworks. His name is Mickey Abraham. For you listening out there, check out all of Mickey's work. He used to write articles for Flat Picking Guitar Magazine and arrangements and things like that. But Mickey kind of blew my mind with this concept, and this is a great point of departure, because like that lick that you stole from Martin Taylor, Magnus, Mickey spent like 20 years compiling phrases like that and then kind of distilling them down into this like system of chromatic lines that you can use for in endless recombinations to improvise, not just over jazz music, but bluegrass. So it's kind of focused on chord tones, like triad tones. So if you have a knowledge of major triads, we would use like, let's use a C for example. So C, E, and G. If you're starting on any one of those notes and trying to get to the next note in the triad, so going from C to E, there's a specific pattern that Mickey likes to play for that. So the root to the third sounds like this. It's just all chromatic up from the root to the third.
Yeah.
Then to get the third to the fifth, there's you can't go chromatic because part of this system relies on the fact that all of the chord tones that you're hitting land on a downbeat.
He's
constructed these lines so that whenever you hit that next strong beat, you're on a chord tone, which I think is genius, right?
Like, yeah,
because it almost allows you to do this mindlessly, you know, in a way that you can just kind of iterate the pattern. So third to fifth is. So he encloses the G.
Like a sixth there.
To get like, instead of, because that lands on another beat, right?
Yeah.
So root to third. Third to fifth. And then fifth to root. So that one's not really chromatic. It's more of just like a pentatonic kind of thing with an enclosure. So all of them together sound like this. Then he has all of these little kind of pieces, parts that you can use to like tread water in on a certain chord tone. So like, so you can kind of make these little patterns.
When you're playing this back to me, you're kind of following a system for it.
Is that true? Absolutely. Wow. And what's neat is like, if you're in any of the chords related to C major, it actually, you can play, like if you're on a D minor 7, you can play these lines over top of it and it gives you like a really cool chromatic sound. So like that 2-5-1 that you were doing, you can just think one the whole time and play these chromatic lines and it gives you those tasty upper extensions that we like, you know, your flat 13s and all that kind of stuff. But without you having to think about it.
Really? Really interesting stuff.
For jazz, it's really amazing. But what really blew my mind was how Mickey incorporates it into bluegrass playing, like fiddle tunes. So he kind of gave this example. You know, we know Billy in the Low Ground, right? Like the A part right there.
Yeah.
So what his challenge to people is to take these chromatic lines and use them for like two measures of a melody and then kind of get back to the melody. So I love this.
Wow.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
So I think the implications are just as strong for bluegrass players as it is like jazz players and stuff. It's a system that kind of works anywhere, even though the language was taken from mostly jazz and swing players.
Yeah. I got to check this out. We make sure we include a link in the description to some of his work.
Yeah, and there's a video, actually, I forgot to mention this, where Mickey details this whole system in the key of C. On my YouTube channel. So if you just go to youtube.com/HayesGriffin and there should be a video titled Chromatic Lines, Chromatic Connecting Lines that you can check out.
And it's also included in the Guitar Club, I guess.
Yes, exactly.
With some tabs maybe.
If you need the tabs and things like that, we've got you hooked up inside of Guitar Club.
Perfect. Wow. That's awesome. So I have to... Could have spent my weekend doing chromatic connecting lines without the tone guard now.
You've got your two missions or whatever, right?
I'm afraid this will stretch longer than the coming weekend. So I think we're going to finish off just quickly this, because we came here to discuss, do you know how to learn a song by ear? If so, how did you acquire this skill? So before you and me are giving some ideas about it, well, quickly, I know how to play a song by ear. How did I acquire the skill? Doing it over and over again. But some good tips coming from the community that we can drop here.
Yeah, I really like Mario inside of the Facebook group said he always starts by looping the first 5 seconds of what you're trying to figure out, and then just like really immersing yourself in like small bits of the melody at a time. I think that was the general theme that I saw is, you know, like you said, you have to do it over and over and over again, right? So you have to come up with maybe some tricks and processes to prevent you from fatiguing your ear in that process.
I still want to like challenge Mario a little bit there, or maybe because my approach is almost the opposite.
Yeah.
I like first getting an overview before getting stuck in the details.
Yeah. I think that's a good plan.
I mean, but it's maybe it works for Mario, but for me, I rather like play back than, let's say I'm going to learn Billy in the Low Ground that you were playing. I rather like keep looping the entire tune so that I somehow I get an idea of how the chord changes. I know like the starting points, and so that I can, well, just listening to that over and over again. And then, well, so starting by getting the overall idea and then going into clearing out the details.
I think that's kind of like my particular method. I was looking through the other comments here, and Laura had one that kind of, I think, speaks to what you just said. She says, if I can't hum the tune unprompted, I don't know it enough to attempt playing it by ear. So I think that's like sort of related, right? Because
exactly.
Like having that big picture of the tune, and that's usually my first step too. I challenge myself when I'm trying to figure something out to not even have the guitar in my hands when I'm doing it. I listen to the tune and I like hum it over and over and over again until I feel like I can sing it. Then I kind of flip into Mario's process.
Yeah.
I sit down and look at like
that's
one measure, two measures at a time, and then try and put it to notes on the guitar, you know? I'm not going to say that that's the best method, but that's the one that I've landed on, and it seems to work.
Yeah, and now actually when we're talking about this, I also realize that it's probably depending of what kind of music or what kind of song that I'm learning. And it's I was first like probably picturing like learning a song or a fiddle tune sort of, but for now that I'm like learning this Charlie Christian, it's almost like learning one little fragment and then just repeating that on my instruments.
Yes.
How to playing around with it different ways, but that is the phrase that I'm just running out.
That's a good one.
Do do day do be do be do.
Those chromatic ones like that are hard.
So, but it's so. But, yeah. Really, I think it's a very important skill for any one of us to develop so that we can learn a song by ear.
Very much, yeah. I think a lot of people assume that folks like you and me who like music theory and are educated on that kind of stuff don't rely on ear stuff. We like just read it off of pages and think about book stuff. But like to me, both skills are like very necessary, you know, to becoming a well-rounded musician.
Yeah. Absolutely. Oh, this is interesting stuff, Hayes. Still, I think time to wrap things up, but very nice discussions. And we got inside the community, we got these questions running. And if you have anything you want to share that we haven't talked about in this episode, head over to the communities or the Facebook group and drop us your answer for the questions. Right. Anything else before we wrap things up, Hayes?
No, I think that's about it. Just want to remind folks, if you want to keep up with the show, head to mandolinsecrets.com/podcast. That'll give you all the information and you'll see all of our episodes there. You can see all of the previous episodes where we talked about tone guards. So
exactly. Yeah. But if I'm not wrong, I think we'll be back within 12 months for another Tone Guard episode, always on top of our mind. Alright, thank you so much for watching, and until next time, always remember, be a music maker.